August could see it. Henry had the long, lean build that made motion seem natural. I'd go out at dawn, burn off all that restless energy. Always felt better on my feet. His chest hitched and he trailed off, coughing against the back of his hand. A single cough, but the sound was like a gunshot in August's skull. For 4 years he had lived with the static of distant gunfire in his head, an echo of his catalyst, a staccato noise filling every silence. But this single sound was worse. He slowed his step and held his breath, waiting to see if it would come again, counting, the way you counted seconds between lightning and thunder. Henry slowed and coughed a second time, softly, but deeper, as if something had come loose inside him. And as they reached a bench, he sank onto it, hands clasped between his knees. The two of them sat in silence, pretending it was natural, instead of an excuse for Henry to catch his breath. "Stupid cough," he muttered, as if it were nothing. A nuisance, the relic of some protracted cold. But they both knew better, even if Henry couldn't bring himself to say it, and August couldn't bring himself to ask. Denial, that's what it was called. The idea that if a thing went unsaid, it didn't really exist, because words had power. Words gave weight and shape and force, and the withholding of them could keep a thing from being real. Could... He watched Henry watching the training hall. FTF, he mused when the coughing fit had passed. I've always hated that name.
Really?
Names are powerful, he said. But a movement shouldn't be built on, around, or for a single person. What happens when that person is gone? Does the movement stop existing? A legacy shouldn't be a limitation. August could feel Henry's mind bending toward him, the way a flower bent toward the sun, the way mass bent toward a planet. He didn't feel like a sun or a planet. But the fact was that he exerted more force on the things around him than they did on him. In his presence, people bent.
Why did you bring me here with you, Henry?
The man sighed, waving a hand at the new recruits.
Sight is an important thing, August. Without it, our minds invent, and the things they invent are almost always worse than the truth. It's important that they see us. See you. It's important that they know you're on their side.
August frowned.
The first thing they see me do is kill.
Henry nodded.
That's why the next thing you do matters so much. And the next, and the next. You're not human, August, and you never will be. But you're not a monster either. Why do you think I chose you to lead the FTF? Because I killed Leo,
he ventured darkly. A shadow crossed Henry's face.
Because it haunts you.
He tapped August's chest, right over the heart.
Because you care.
August had nothing to say to that. He was relieved when Henry finally freed him from the track. From the prying eyes, the fearful looks. He slipped back into the hallway and headed for the elevator.
Hey, Freddy!
August turned and saw Colin Stevenson in FTF fatigues. He was struck by a split second of memory. An ill-fitting uniform, a cafeteria table, an arm around his shoulders. The brief illusion of a normal life.
That's not my real name, he said.
Colin gaped at him.
Are you serious?
He clutched his chest.
I feel so betrayed.
It took August an instant to catch on. Sarcasm.
How's training?
Colin gestured down at himself.
As you can see, it's doing wonders for my physique.
August actually smiled. The last 6 months had stretched him into a new shape, but Colin hadn't grown an inch. The boy's family had been found on a rescue mission in the Yellow Zone during those first weeks. They'd been cornered by a pair of Maokai content to wear them down or starve them out. August himself had been on the extraction team, which was quite a shock to Colin, who'd known him only as Frederick Gallagher, quiet sophomore transfer student. But in Colin's words, "I guess the whole saving thing kinda clears the slate." The weird thing was, Colin didn't treat him differently, now that he knew. He didn't cower or startle whenever August entered a room. Didn't look at him as if he were anyone, anything, but who, what he'd been. But Colin hadn't seen him fight a Maokai or reap a sinner's soul. Hadn't seen him do anything monstrous. And again, knowing Colin, he'd probably say it looked badass or cool. Humans were strange and unpredictable.
"Mr. Stevenson," called one of the squad leaders. "Back to your training circle."
Colin gave an exaggerated groan.
"They make us do sit-ups, Freddy. I hate sit-ups. Hated them at Colton, hate them here."
He started walking backward.
"Hey, some of us are meeting in the lobby for cards. You in?"
"You in?" Two small words that shook something loose in August, that almost made him forget. But then his calm buzzed and he remembered who he was. What he was.
"Alpha."
"I can't,"
he said.
"I work night squad."
"Cool, cool."
"Mr. Stevenson," called the captain.
"I'm adding sit-ups for every second you're late."
Colin started jogging off.
"Once they give me the all clear, I'm signing up. Maybe we'll end up on the same team."
August's spirits fell. He tried to imagine Colin, kind, short, bright Colin, hunting monsters beside him in the dark. But instead, he saw the boy lying on the pavement, warm eyes open, his throat torn out. August had never belonged in Colin's world, and Colin didn't belong in his. And he would do whatever it took to keep him out. Chapter 13. Corsi. Kate's pen scratched across the paper. Maokai. Letter by letter, square by square. Sunai. She ignored the puzzle's clues. Six down. A spicy pepper. Four across, the largest supercity. Just killing time. Now and then her attention flicked up from the crossword and through the bookstore windows to the crime scene across the street, the alley roped off with yellow tape. There had been a cop out there earlier, and then a few photographers lurking around to get a shot. But now that dusk had given way to dark, the scene had emptied out. Not much to see with the body carted off and the business closed. Kate abandoned the crossword and stepped out into the night, fitting the wireless bud into her ear. She tapped her phone and silence gave way to voices talking over each other.
"Not what I'm saying.
Strike you as weird.
Mercury in retrograde or something."
Kate cleared her throat.
"Hey, guys," she said, "reporting for duty."
She was met by a swell of,
"Hey,"
and "What's up?" and
"It sounds cool when she says it."
"Any updates?" she asked, setting off down the block.
"No new leads,"
said Teo over the continuous tap of fingers on a keyboard. Kate crossed the street, heading toward the crime scene tape.
"Square one, then,"
she said, ducking under the yellow line. She skirted the markers, trying to recreate the scene in her mind. Where had the monster come from? Where would it go next?
"You think it'll come back?"
asked Liam. Kate crouched, fingers hovering over the shadow of a bloodstain.
"These monsters aren't all that bright. This one found a meal. No reason it won't come back looking for another."
She pulled a UV light from her back pocket. As she switched it on, the bloodstain beneath her turned vivid blue against the pavement. So did a trail. It led away like breadcrumbs. Clusters of dried drops where the blood had dripped from the monster's taloned hands. Kate straightened, following the trail down the alley.
"Come out, wherever you are,"
she whispered. Nice, juicy human heart.
Not funny, Kate, said Riley. But the blue dots had already vanished, the trail gone cold. Kate sighed and pocketed the light. It had taken her 2 weeks to find the last pair of monsters, with 3 bodies to go on. But the night was young, and she had to start somewhere. Time to widen the net, she said.
Already on it,
answered Bee as the furious sound of typing filled Kate's earpiece, and the wardens did what the wardens did best. Hack street cameras across the city.
Let's start with a 1/4-mile radius.
I've got eyes on 1st through 3rd over to Clement. 4th through 9th as high as Bradley.
Hey, little lady.
The voice came from behind her, its edges slurred. Kate rolled her eyes and turned to find a man leering, his eyes glassy as they roved across her. Because, of course, monsters weren't the only thing she had to worry about.
Excuse me?
Kick his ass, offered Bee.
Kate, warned Riley.
Shouldn't be out all alone.
The man swayed a little.
Not safe.
Kate arched a brow, fingers drifting toward the taser at her belt.
That so?
He took another step toward her.
Think of all the bad things that could happen.
You planning to protect me? The man gave a weak chuckle and licked his lips.
No.
He lunged for her arm, and when Kate took a single swift step back, he stumbled, losing his balance. She caught him by the throat and slammed him into the wall. He slid down the bricks with a groan, but there was no time to celebrate. Because just then, someone screamed. The sound hit Kate in the stomach and she spun, already moving toward the source as a second voice joined in and a third. She sprinted down the block and skidded around the corner, expecting to find a heart eater amid a crowd of people. But the street was empty, and the screams were coming from inside a restaurant. Kate slammed to a stop as a line of blood streaked across the front window. The door hung open, and someone was crawling forward on hands and knees, while others slumped on tables. At the back of the room, she saw a man, holding what looked like a pair of kitchen knives. The knives were slick with blood, and his eyes shone strangely, and he was smiling. Not a deranged grin, but something calm, almost peaceful, which made the whole scene so much worse. Kate touched her ear. Call the police.
What?
Asked Teo.
What's going?
Her voice was shaking. 116 South Marks. A body tumbled back into the glass, leaving a red streak in its wake. The man with the knives vanished into the kitchen.
Kate, are you?
Now!
The air smelt like blood and panic as she forced herself toward the restaurant, toward the massacre, toward the chaos. And there, in the middle of it all, so still she almost didn't see it, stood a monster. Not a heart eater, but something else. Something shaped more or less like a person, at least around the edges, but made entirely of shadow. It stood, watching the scene unfold with a serenity that matched the killer's, and as it watched, it seemed to grow more solid, more real, details etching themselves across the blank canvas of its skin.
Hey!
She called out. The monster twitched at the sound of her voice and turned toward her, revealing the edge of a silver eye just as sirens came blaring down the street. Kate spun around as the red and blue strobes of police cars swung around the corner, barreling past her toward the restaurant where the screams had given way to horrible, blanketing silence. The monster was gone. Kate turned, searching the street. She'd looked away only for an instant, a breath. It couldn't have gotten far, but it was nowhere. Nowhere. There. The shadow reappeared at the mouth of an alley.
What's going on?
Demanded Liam as Kate took off at a sprint. The shadow vanished again and reappeared farther down the alley as Kate cut into the gap between buildings. Sirens wailed, and behind her eyes she still saw the streaks of blood, the man's knives, but also his calm resolve, and the creature's own expression, a mirror, an echo. Her mind raced. What had it done? What did it feed on? Why was it standing there, just watching?
Kate, are you there?
She drew an iron spike as she ran. The alley around her was empty. Empty. And then it wasn't. She slid to a stop on the damp concrete, breathless from the chase and the sudden appearance of the shadow in her path. This time, the monster didn't flee. And neither did Kate. Not because she didn't want to. In that moment, she did. But because she couldn't look away. She thought of the monster as a shadow, but it was more and less. It was wrong. It looked wrong. It felt wrong. Like a hole cut in the world. Like deep space. Empty and cold. Hollow and hungry. It drew all the heat out of the air. All the light. All the sound. Plunging them both into silence. And she felt suddenly heavy. Slow. Her limbs weighed down as the darkness. The monster. The nothing. Closed the gap between them.
Kate!
Pleaded a voice in her ear, and she tried to speak, tried to pull free, tried to will her limbs to move, to fight, to run. But the monster's gaze was like gravity, holding her down, and then its icy hands were on her skin. Riley's voice in her ear. Kate! Somewhere, distantly, she felt the spike slip from her fingers. The far-off sound of metal hitting asphalt as the creature lifted her chin. Up close, it had no mouth, only a pair of silver eyes set like discs into its empty face. Like mirrors, thought Kate, as she caught sight of herself. And then, she was falling in. Chapter 14. At first, it thinks she is another toy to wind up and release, another match to strike. But she is already lit, so full of grief and anger, of guilt and fear. Who deserves to pay? It asks her heart. And her heart answers, everyone. Everyone. And it knows. She is like it, a thing of limitless potential. She will burn like a sun among stars. She will make it solid. She will make it real. She will...
Kate! Kate!
And then, somehow, she pulls away. It lets her go, and it does not. She tears free. And she does Kate! Riley's voice screamed in her ear and she tore herself free. And it felt like tearing. Clothes caught on a nail, skin on barbed wire, pieces left behind, something deep inside her ripping. She was on her knees. When had she fallen? Hands scraping pavement and her head a riot of pain. Everything blurred as if she'd taken a blow. But... she didn't remember. She couldn't remember. The voices were shouting in her skull, and she wrenched the earpiece from her ear and cast it into the dark as the alley slid in and out of focus, a second image ghosting her vision in a sickening overlay. She squeezed her eyes shut, counted to five, and then she blinked and saw the red and blue lights dancing on the alley wall, remembered the restaurant, the screams, the man, then the monster. That void with its mirror eyes and a voice that wasn't a voice inside her head. Who deserves to pay? She remembered, distantly, a swell of anger, a longing to hurt something, someone. But it was like a dream, quickly fading. The monster was gone, and Kate lurched to her feet. The world rocking violently. She caught herself against the wall. One step at a time, she made her way back toward the flashing lights, stopping at the mouth of the alley as an ambulance sped away. The crowd had gathered, morbidly curious, but the attack was over. Whatever it was, it had moved from an active scene to a passive one. A row of body bags lined the curb, and police moved in and out, the sirens off, and the scene already growing still, like a corpse. A cold fear crept through her. She didn't understand what had happened, what she'd seen. But the longer she stared, the less she could remember. And the harder she thought, the worse the pain in her head. Something dripped from her chin, and she tasted copper in the back of her throat and realized her nose was bleeding. She pushed off the wall and nearly fell again, but forced herself to keep moving and didn't stop until she was home. When she finally stumbled into the apartment, she nearly missed the person on the couch. Riley was already on his feet, moving as if to catch her. "Jesus, Kate! What happened?" At least that's what she thought he said. The words themselves were muffled by a ringing in her ears, a white noise like being underwater, pain lancing through her head, a strobe behind her eyes. "Kate?" Her vision blurred, focused, blurred again, and she could feel the bile rising in her throat. She beelined for the bathroom and felt more than heard Riley on her heels, but didn't look back. Why was he here? Why was he always getting in the way? Anger rose in her, sudden and irrational. Anger at the look on his face, the worry in his eyes, the fact he was trying so hard to be someone she didn't want, didn't need. He caught her by the arm. "Talk to me." Kate spun, shoving him forcefully back into a spindly table in the hall. Riley let out a yelp as both he and the table went crashing to the floor, and for an instant, looking at him on the ground, so open, so pathetic, Kate wanted to hurt him, wanted it with such simple clarity that she knew it wasn't real. What was happening to her? She turned and stumbled into the bathroom, locked the door, and retched until her stomach was empty and her throat was raw. Brought her forehead to rest against the cold porcelain as the pounding on the door was drowned out by the pounding in her skull. Something was wrong. She had to get up, had to open the door, had to let Riley in. But then she closed her eyes, and the darkness felt so good. Somewhere, far away, her body hit the floor. But she kept falling down, down, down into black. Chapter 15. It moves in the cold, nothing. A shadow of itself folded between what is and what could be. The girl's mind a shard of heat within its own. In her head, it saw a city carved in two, 100 faceless faces defined only by the red of their eyes, the flash of their teeth, a place of blood and death, vice and violence, and such wondrous potential. It saw and it knew, it knows, this is the way together, the girl and the city. The city and the girl, and the heat will be enough to burn, enough to be made real. Chapter 16. They were on the wrong side of the seam when the call came in. There was no right and wrong side, according to Henry. No north and south. Not anymore. But the fact was that one side of the city was being run by monsters. One side was a field of landmines, a place of shadows and teeth. On the south side of the seam, running into trouble was a risk. On the north, it was a certainty, especially after dark. August's squad had crossed the seam to offer backup to another team securing a depot. It had gone off without a hitch, and they were almost done loading the trucks with supplies when the comm on August's collar crackled to life.
"Night Squad 1, we've got a problem.
Squad 6 has gone offline mid-mission. A bad feeling brushed his ribs. It wasn't a good sign when whole squads went dark.
How many soldiers?
4.
Location? The Falstead building on Mathis.
He met Rez's gaze over the hood of the truck.
X-code?
The X-code referred to the FTF maps in the compound's control room, the ones covered in small colored crosses. Black marked locations actively held by the enemy. Blue marked ones held by the FTF. Gray was for places cleared or abandoned.
Gray, said the dispatcher. But it hasn't been rechecked in more than a month. Patrol on the scene caught a light signal from the 3rd floor. Squad 6 went to investigate.
August was already peeling away. He would have gone alone, but there were no solo missions. That was the rule in the FTF, even for Sunai. So Rez came with him. Nothing needed to be said. This was the order of the rank and file. Harris, Jackson, and Ani would stay with the other squad, help them back to the compound with their supplies. Rez was his second, had been since the squad was formed. They moved at a brisk pace, August with his violin out, his bow ready, and Rez cradling her gun. The Falstead building was 2 blocks north and 3 east, and they kept to the streetlights wherever they weren't broken, trading exposure for a modicum of safety from the night. When they rounded the last corner, August's steps slowed, then stopped. There was no sign of the Falstead, no sign of anything. The city just ended, replaced by a wall of black. Rez let out a curse, fingers tightening on her gun. They were standing at the edge of a blackout zone. Someone or something had killed a section of the power grid, plunging several square blocks into solid darkness. There was another name for these blackout zones among the FTF. Boneyards.
Wait here, said August.
It was an empty order, one Rez always disobeyed, but he had to say it. She snorted, shouldering the gun.
And let you have all the fun?
They both drew light batons from their pockets. Unlike the HUVs, which issued a single beam, the batons threw light to every side. The result was a diffuse glow, better than shadow, but not as safe as focused light. The techs hadn't found a way to make them brighter. Together, they crossed the line into the dark. It parted around them like a fog, thrown back a few feet in each direction by the light of their batons. But just beyond, the Corsi's wet white eyes blinked, their voices hissing out like steam.
Beat, break, ruin, flesh, bone.
August could hear Rez's heart thudding in her chest, but her steps were steady, her breathing even. When they were first paired up, he'd asked her if she was afraid.
Not anymore, she'd said,
and she'd showed him a scar running down her front.
Monsters?
He'd asked. And she'd shaken her head and said her own heart had tried to kill her, long before the monsters had. So she'd decided not to be afraid.
Doesn't do much good, she'd said, to fear one kind of death and not another.
Their lights caught broken glass on the Falstead's front steps. The doors hung askew, and the place had the eerie feeling of the recently abandoned. Someone had already set a baton in the center of the lobby floor. The pool of light didn't reach the corners of the room, but it carved a path. Another waited at the base of the stairs.
Breadcrumbs, thought August absently.
A relic from another one of Ilse's stories. As they started up the stairs, a bad feeling began to spread like cold through August's chest.
Feelings again, little brother?
He pushed Leo's voice aside as they climbed. Around them, the Falstead began to change. The lobby below had retained its air of luxury, but the second floor was starting to show the rot. By the time they reached the third, wallpaper was peeling back, boards crumbling underfoot. The walls were riddled with bullet holes and flaking drywall, whole sections staved in as if someone had taken a sledgehammer to them. Through open doors, he saw furniture overturned, glass shattered. Dark stains coating every surface. Stale smoke and old blood. All of it human.
What the hell is this place?
Murmured Rez. August didn't have an answer. They found the first body on the stairs. A baton sat in his lap, casting an eerie pool of light around his corpse, shining on the blood spilling down the steps. His combat vest was gone, his head hung at an impossible angle, and the FTF patch had been torn from his sleeve. "Shit," muttered Rez, her voice laced not with panic, but anger. "Shit! Shit!" Beyond the steady beat of her swearing, August caught the far-off sound of something dripping, the faint creak of boards somewhere overhead. He held a finger to his lips, and she went silent, crouched beside the body. Nothing happened, and after several long seconds, they both started moving again. Up ahead, a mass coiled and writhed in the middle of the hall. August caught a glint of silvery talons, a razor jaw, but Rez was a step ahead, lobbing a small light grenade across the floor. August squeezed his eyes shut as it detonated, throwing out a silent blast of UV light. The Corsi scattered with a hiss, fleeing into deeper shadow. Most of the creatures escaped, but one went up in smoke, its teeth and claws raining to the floor like chips of ice. Two more corpses lay in the hall, their bodies twisted. But by the looks of it, the Corsi hadn't killed them. Their bodies were still mostly intact, their patches taken like trophies. What had the voice on the comm said?
"Patrol on the scene caught a light signal, went to investigate."
Where was the fourth soldier? Light danced in a doorway at the other end of the hall. Not the steady glow of a dropped baton, but the fickle stutter of a candle. August pocketed his light and gripped the neck of his violin with one hand and the steel bow with the other. He left Rez with the bodies and moved toward the room, drawn by the light and the soft sound of a weight on floorboards, the drip of something against wood. A single candle burned upright in the middle of the room. It was more like a cage, slats missing from the ceiling and floor. And against the far wall, beneath a cracked window, sat the last member of Squad 6, gagged and bound. The soldier's head lolled. His vest was gone, and his shirt front was soaked through with blood.
"Dead weight,"
warned Leo. And real or not, he was right. August could hear the man's heart fighting, losing. But it didn't stop him from calling for Rez or picking his way through the room. He didn't slow until he was close enough to see the word on the floorboards, scrawled in the soldier's blood. "Boo." August's gaze snapped to the cage-like room, and then to the window. The darkness beyond was studded with a pair of watching red eyes, the sharp corner of a smile. Alice. Rez was beside him now, reaching for the soldier's pulse. He caught her wrist.
"Get back,"
he said, pushing her toward the door. But it was too late. The ceiling creaked above them, and August looked up just in time to see the glint of metal, a flurry of limbs, before the first monster came crashing down. Chapter 17. They came from everywhere. Not monsters, he realized, but humans. Fangs, with blood on their cheeks and steel collars wrapped around their throats and the manic smiles of the drugged and the mad. Some had knives and some had guns, and one dropped down right behind Rez. She spun, cracking him across the face as August raised his violin. Bow met strings, but before he could draw a note, a shot exploded through the air, grazing the steel and ripping the instrument from his hand. It went skittering across the floor. Rez kicked out, trying to send it back while headlocking a man twice her size. But it was lodged between two broken boards, and before August could reach her or the violin, a hulking man slammed him backward into the soldier. The wall. The window. The soldier slumped, lifeless, and the glass gave way. August nearly fell through, catching himself against the jagged edge. Glass bit into his palms, but drew no blood, and he surged back into the room just as an axe caught him in the chest. The blade cut through mesh and cloth before slamming into his ribs. It didn't break the skin, but it drove all the air from his lungs, and he doubled over, gasping. The fangs circled him, and he slashed out with the sharp spine of his bow as a length of iron chain wrapped around his throat. The pure metal turned his stomach. His legs went weak, the chain wrenching him to his knees. And for one horrible second, he was back in the warehouse in the waste, heat screaming through his skin as he burned from the inside out, and Sloane stood laughing at the edge of the light, and the blunt side of the axe came down on the back of his neck, and he hit the floor hard, the boards cracking beneath him. His vision doubled, the chain at his throat vicing, and then they were on him, kicking and beating, the blows shallow, the pain brief but disorienting.
Sunai, just like she said, truss him up.
August's hands tightened into fists, and he realized he was still holding the bow, the steel pinned beneath someone's boot. Through the tangle of limbs, he saw Rez wrest herself free. She managed a single step toward him, and he tried to tell her to run, to get out, but she wouldn't listen. She never listened. She threw herself at the tangle of bodies, peeling one away from the group. In the instant of distraction, the other fangs faltered, torn between the two targets. The boot came off his bow, and August slashed violently across the man's leg. He went down screaming and clutching his calf as blood, but also light, bloomed across his skin. Music wasn't the only way to bring a soul to surface. Leo had taught him that. August grabbed the man's ankle, bone cracking beneath his fingers as the soul sang through him, sharp as electricity and just as violent. Ice water and anger and a single pealing scream.
"Embrace it,"
urged his brother, as the world slowed, every detail in the broken room suddenly vivid, from the warped boards to the candlelight. The fang collapsed, his eyes burned black, and August shot to his feet, tugging the chain from his neck as the others scrambled back, clearly torn between whatever they'd been told, given, promised, and simple physical fear. They all recoiled, except for one. A single fang stood in the doorway, holding Rez like a shield, one hand clutching her hair and a serrated blade at her throat.
"Put down the bow," he said through bloody teeth.
"Don't you dare," growled Rez.
"Dead weight,"
repeated Leo. August heard the clank of chain, sensed the other fangs closing in on him again. The violin still wedged between the cracked boards a yard away.
"Hey, boss!"
August met Rez's gaze and saw the glint between her fingers. But before he could stop her, she drove the dagger back into the man's leg. He howled and let go, but not before slicing her throat. A sound left August then, low and animal, and he forced himself to lunge, not for the killer, but for the violin. Hands tore at him, but he ignored them, grabbing the instrument and slashing the bow across the strings. The first note came out hard and sharp, and the fangs recoiled, pressing their hands over their ears as if that would save them. But it was too late. They were too late. By the second note, the fight went out of them. By the third, they were falling to their knees. August left the music echoing on the air and ran for Rez. He dropped the violin and sank to the floor beside her.
"Stay with me,"
he said, pressing his hands to the wound at her neck. There was so much blood bubbling up between his fingers. Too much, and it slicked his skin, made his fingers slip.
"So much red," he thought, "and none of it light."
Her mouth opened and closed, but no sound came out. Her chest juttered up, down.
"Stay with me,"
the words came out pleading. August had reaped 1,000 souls, but it was such a different thing to feel a life bleed out beneath his hands, powerless to staunch the flow. For all the souls he'd reaped, he'd so rarely seen this kind of death. Never felt the way it stole beneath his fingers, life spilling across the floor until that horrible cusp, the instant when it ended. When Laura Torres stopped being a person and became a body. No transition, no ease. Gone and there. There and gone. 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 August's hand slid from the wound at Rez's throat. Her eyes were open and empty, and red light flickered across her face. Not hers, of course, but theirs. A room of ruined souls waiting to be reaped. August eased Rez's body down and rose to his feet. He moved among the fangs, blood-stained fingers searching out skin. They whispered their sins, but he didn't listen, didn't care. Their confessions meant nothing to him. He snuffed their lights, reaped their souls, his whole body humming with the sudden influx of power. His senses sharpened to the point of pain until there was only one left. The man who'd killed Rez. His lips were moving, his soul a sheen of sweat against his skin, but August didn't reach out to reap it. Leo's words swam inside his head. Not the stuff of madness, but memory. A memory from the night he'd taught August about pain and why he so often used it.
"Our purpose is not to bring peace,"
his brother had said.
"It is to bestow penance."
August watched the man's soul sink back beneath the surface of his skin, watched his senses return.
"Why shouldn't they suffer for their sins?"
The fang blinked, straightened, his mouth twisting in a grimace. But before he could speak, before he could say or do anything, August slammed his boot into the man's wounded leg, and he buckled, clutching at his thigh before August forced him to the floor, fingers closing around the steel collar at his throat.
"Look at me,"
he said, squeezing until the metal bent and buckled.
"How does it feel?"
The man couldn't answer, couldn't breathe. He scrambled and scratched and gasped as the red light of his soul surfaced again, pouring through August's hands. It hit him like ice, a cold so sharp it hurt. And it was the pain that brought August back to himself, to what he was doing, what he had done. He wrenched backward, but it was too late. The light was gone, and all that was left was the man's contorted body. Eyes burned out and mouth open in a silent scream, red and purple welts rising around the crushed collar. August felt sick. His body ached with the pressure, the presence of the souls, and he wished he could wrench them up, expel the weight of so many unwanted lives. But it was no use. The souls were a part of him now, fusing to his bones and surging through his veins. His chest hitched, and he brought his hand to his front where the axe had cut through armored vest and uniform but failed to wound.
"Alpha Pair, report!"
He looked down at his hands, coated in Rez's blood. It was drying on his skin, tacky and cold.
"Alpha Pair!"
August had always hated blood. It was the same color as a soul, but empty, useless the moment it left a person's veins.
"August."
He forced his mind back.
"I'm here,"
he said, startled by the calm in his voice, steady when something deeper wanted to scream.
"We were ambushed."
His gaze went to the broken window where the red eyes had watched from the dark.
"Rez is dead."
"Shit." Philip then. Philip was the only one who swore on the comm.
"And the other squad?"
"Dead," answered August. What a simple word that was. Not messy at all.
"We'll send a team at dawn for the bodies."
And then Philip's voice was gone, and others were ricocheting across the comm, none of them directed at him. He picked up his bow, his violin, these small, solid pieces of himself, then busied his hands arranging light batons to keep the corpses safe. Corpse. Another simple word that did so little work. Failed to describe something that was once a person. And now was simply a shell. Eventually a familiar voice broke the static in his ear. "August," said Emily.
You should return to the compound.
Her voice, as steady as his own. He swallowed back the,
no, no, no,
and said instead,
I'm waiting. I have to wait.
And Emily didn't make him say why, so she must have understood what he meant. Violence begets violence, and monstrous acts make monsters. The Maokai in the hall came first, rose up like spirits from the bodies of the soldiers, and he cut them down. Then came the Maokai by the smothered candle, rising up beside the word written in blood, and he dispatched that one too. And then it came down to Rez. Her murder had been the work of an instant, but it felt like forever before the shadows finally began to twitch. His fingers tightened on his bow as the knight took a shuddering breath, and then, standing among the corpses, stood the monster. It looked down at itself in a gesture so human, so natural, and yet so wrong, and then its head came up. Red eyes widening, right before August drove his steel bow into its heart. Chapter 18. Half a block from the Falstead, August knew he was being followed. He could hear the shuffle of steps, not on the street behind him, but somewhere overhead. He didn't slow until something floated to the ground at his feet. It was a patch. Three letters, FTF, visible through the blood. As he straightened, another drifted down.
Hasn't anyone told you? Said a voice on the air. It's not safe to wander after dark.
He looked up and saw her standing on a nearby roof, moonlight tracing her pale hair.
Alice.
She smiled, flashing knife-point teeth, and sank into a crouch at the edge of the roof. August told his hands to move, to lift the violin, but it hung there, dead weight at his side. She wasn't Kate, but every time he saw her, his stomach still dropped. Every time, for just a second. The Maokai didn't look like her, not really. All the pieces were wrong, but the whole was more than the sum of its parts. Alice looked like the Kate he'd never met. Like the one he'd expected to find at Colton before he met the real girl. The way she'd been described to him. Daughter of a monster. All the things Kate wasn't. All the things she pretended to be. Alice was. He had known, hadn't wanted to think about it, but had known all the same that something would walk out of that house beyond the waste. And yet it had still been a shock, meeting her. It was 2 weeks, maybe three, after Kate, after Callum, after Sloane. He was responding to a distress call, but when he got there, all he found were corpses. Corpses and her, standing in the middle of it all, covered in blood, and grinning. The same grin she was wearing now, a grin that was all monster.
"Your trap didn't work," he said.
Alice only shrugged. The next one will. Or the next. I've got plenty of time, and you've got plenty of people to lose. Such a shame about your friends. She tossed patches like petals over the edge of the roof. Far more than the number of soldiers he'd lost that night.
They're all so fragile, aren't they? What do you see in them?
Humanity.
Alice laughed softly. A sound like steam escaping from a pot.
You know, I thought if I used humans, you might try to spare them.
Her red eyes danced over his blood-stained front.
I guess I was wrong.
I don't spare sinners.
Alice's gaze flicked up.
You spared Kate?
The name like a barb in the monster's mouth.
You're sparing me, right now. With your friend's blood still on your hands. Must not have been a very good friend.
He knew she was baiting him, but the anger still rose like heat on his skin. As if on cue, red eyes began to flicker around him in the dark. Alice hadn't come alone, but there was a reason she kept her distance, lobbing taunts down from the rooftop. Asunai's music was as toxic to a Maokai as a Maokai's soul was to Asunai. If August started playing, the other monsters would die, but Alice would get away. She flashed a smile, and there it was again, in the twist of her lips, the shadow of someone else. "I'm not her," sniped the Maokai, and August recoiled at the sudden venom. "You've got that look on your face, poor little lost monster. Do you miss her, our Kate?" Her eyes narrowed. "Do you know where she is?"
"I don't," he said. "But I hope it's far away from here, far away from you. And if she has any sense, she'll never come back."
Alice sneered, and with that, the illusion shattered. What little resemblance she bore to Kate was gone, and all that was left was monstrous. The sight of that true face freed August of any hesitation. He swung the violin up in a fluid arc, the tension collapsing as Alice lunged backward into shadow, and the other Maokai rushed at August in the light, and his bow sliced like a knife across his strings. As he walked home, it started to rain, a steady curtain of water that soaked August through and left a dark trail, the blood of friends and enemies, of FTFs and fangs and monsters, mingled in his wake. Somewhere between slaughtering Alice's Maokai and reaching the seam, August realized something. It didn't have to hurt this much. For months he'd been playing a part, instead of becoming it. Pretending to be strong while all the while harboring a shred of hope that there was still a world where he could feel human.
"Because you care."
That's what Henry had said. But Henry was wrong. Henry was human. He didn't understand that in trying to be both, August succeeded at neither. Leo had understood, had sacrificed humanity to be the monster the humans needed. All August had to do was let go. It was time to let go.
"Stop,"
ordered a pair of FTFs as he reached the seam. The violin should have been enough to ID him, but the bow was slick with gore. The instrument streaked red, and in the rain-slick night, he hardly passed for human. When the soldiers saw his face, they staggered back, apologies caught in their throats as they opened the gate. He continued on through South City and across the light strip and into the bright warmth of the compound lobby. The clash and thrum of conversation died, the steady thud of movement froze, and in the silence, 100 pairs of eyes turned toward him. August had avoided his reflection in every pane of glass, every dark puddle, every steel sheet. But he saw it now, not in a mirror, but in the faces of everyone who looked at him, and then quickly looked away. Could they see the light of the souls he'd reaped, the monsters he'd slain? Could they feel the darkness in the lives he'd taken, the hate and violence wicking off his skin? He started across the lobby, the heels of his boots leaving damp crescent moons of blood and ash in his wake. No one approached. No one followed. Even Henry Flynn, surrounded by captains, took one look at him and stilled.
"You wanted them to see me," thought August. "So let them see."
The head of the FTF started toward him, but August held up a hand, a command, a gesture of dismissal. And then his eyes found Colin, and he had the grim satisfaction of seeing the boy inhale sharply, stricken by the sight of him. Some small part of August exhaled with relief. It had only been a matter of time before Colin saw the truth, the monster behind the mask. Until he realized, August was not, would never be, like him. He reached the elevators, the silence heavy on his shoulders. But he felt the shift inside it, the awe as well as the fear. These people looked at him and saw something not less than human, but more. Something strong enough to fight for them, strong enough to win.
"Stand straight, little brother."
And for the first time, August listened. Chapter 19. Sloane stood at the kitchen counter, flipping through a book on war. Alice left them scattered all over the penthouse, a trail of crumbs marking her ceaseless movement and fickle attention. He let the book fall shut as she came in.
"Where have you been?"
He didn't trust it when she wandered off. She was the kind of pet one needed to keep on a leash. Alice hopped up onto the island. "Hunting." Sloane's eyes narrowed. She'd always relished making a mess when she fed, and tonight there was no blood on her hands or face.
"I take it you failed."
A pile of FTF patches sat beside her hand, and she twisted and began absently building a tower as if they were cards.
"I prefer to think of success as a process," she mused. "He's not an easy catch."
"Ah, August." It was indeed hard to catch a Sunai, harder still to kill one. Sloane knew from personal experience. Ilsa had been a lucky turn, but the new Sunai, Sorrow, was developing a reputation. Sloane's old friend Leo had driven a steel pole through his back, and August had slipped through Sloane's grip before he had a chance to break him. He didn't expect Alice to succeed where he hadn't. He had simply given her the task as a means of distraction, something to do besides feeding her bottomless appetite.
"If I catch him, can I keep him?" she'd asked.
Now her tongue rested between her sharpened teeth as she stacked a second tier.
"I did lose a few fangs."
"How many?"
7, I think. Maybe there were 8.
He was beginning to regret her assignment.
"And how, pray tell, did you lose them?"
"I'm not sure it really counts as losing," she continued, building her tower. "They did take out 5 soldiers, and really, isn't that what they're for?"
"Alice."
"Don't Alice me."
The mask of humor was suddenly replaced by scorn.
"They're pawns, to play with Flynn's little toy soldiers."
"This isn't a game."
"But it is." She swung back to face him. "And games are meant to be won. Aren't you tired yet of playing this tug of war? Of keeping your pieces on only half the board? Make a move. Change the play. You are supposed to be king of the monsters, Sloane."
She leaped down from the counter, flashing a wide smile full of teeth.
"So act like it."
Sloane had held his ground through her whole little speech, but now he moved. In a single motion, he pinned her back against the counter. Alice's shoulders knocked into the makeshift tower, and it collapsed with a soft sound. She stilled as Sloane drew his fingers through her white blonde hair.
"Careful, Alice," he murmured. "My patience is like that house, precariously balanced."
His grip tightened, forcing her head back to expose her throat.
"Who knows when it might tip?"
Alice swallowed.
"Careful, Sloane," she said, eyes flaring bright. "It's one thing to kill a nameless thug, but start killing those close to you, and the others might wonder."
She let the sentence die, but the threat was clear.
"Well then," he said, loosening his grip. "It's a good thing we're on the same team." "One day," he thought, "I will savor your death. As for your concerns,"
his eyes danced over the pile of patches that had so briefly been a tower,
"I can only promise that your patience will be rewarded."
He took up the nearest patch from the pile and ran a nail across the letters on its front.
FTF.
3 letters that had come to mean a force, a wall, a war. But were, in truth, nothing but a compound, stones and mortar assembled by men.
"And what goes up," thought Sloane, "can always be torn down."
Verse 2. The Monster in Me. Chapter 1 She is